Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 97 of the CU Insight Experience. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Trellance, from data to insights, the right way. My name is Randy Smith. I am one of the co-founders of CUinsight.com, and it is my job on the show to have conversations with the best and the brightest of the credit union community. I get to pick their brains and see if we can't find a few nuggets that we can all learn from. My guest on today's show is Mr. Burt J. Hash Jr. Burt is the former president and CEO of MeQ in Baltimore and one of the busiest retired guys that I know. Burt serves on a bunch of boards and committees in his community as well as around the world. This episode was a long time coming. The reason it took so long is I always assumed we'd be having this conversation in Africa. George is on the Akoska Foundation board. He's active with the DE community over on the continent. I have known Burt for years, but it was a three-hour flight delay where we had a conversation in the Nairobi airport. We almost missed our flight because we were still talking in the little coffee shop when they finally started to board. I wished that day I had a recorder going. It would have made for an amazing podcast. So this conversation that we had is quite honestly my envision of a replica of that. It was just such an easy and enjoyable conversation to have. We talked about leadership. We talked about board relations, community involvement, mentoring, what we can learn from the SOCOs over on the continent in Africa, what we can do better as credit unions, and so much more. This was so much fun. I am sure you can hear in my voice how much I enjoy talking to Burt any chance I get. I am honored to call him a friend. As always, we close the show with the rapid fire questions. There are so many things from Burt that we can all learn from. I am sure you're going to find a few in this episode yourself. So without further ado, I give you my conversation with Mr. Burt J. Hash Jr. Enjoy. Mr. Burt J. Hash Jr., welcome to the show, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Thank you, Randy. Thank you for the opportunity to come on the show.
Oh, I'm so excited to get to talk to you. A few different things that I wanted to throw out there. If your ears have been ringing over the past year, every time Renee and I speak, both of us, somehow your name always comes up because we're both such huge fans of yours, and both of us always have to say Mr. Burt J. Hash Jr. So this question is probably purely just for me, but what's the J stand for?
Well, the J is the junior.
The J is the junior.
Yeah, I'm not the original. Okay. That's my roommate told me one time.
Yeah, Dad was the original, right? Yeah. That is great. Well, I got to let everybody know who's listening. This was an episode that I thought for sure we would do in person last year when we were all allowed to move about this world freely. You and I got to spend a couple different times together in Kenya, you know, with our friends George and David and everything Lois has going on over there, you know, with Akoska and DE. I always assumed we would be doing this at SOCO Congress, but this is where we are today. So I'm excited that we can share this time together. And I really want to jump right into that part of it because I always love to feature that anytime I can. You had a long career, which we will get more into. And now, in retirement, and I just did air quotes, you know, you've been working a lot with the Akoska board and the DEs over, you know, in Africa. Why is that so important for you? And is that something that you also participated in, I guess, during your career?
No, actually, I had over the my career sent a number of individuals through the Credit Union Development Educators Program. And Lois was always after me to come myself. And I thought, well, you know, I create DEs by sending them through the program. But I did promise her that I would go, and I went 2 months before I retired.
Okay.
In 2014. That was in April 2014. In June 2014, she made me an offer to go to Africa, and I told her I couldn't do it that month because that was the month I was retiring.
Okay.
And I agreed to go to the class in January, become a student. And that, as people say, DE changes your life. DE not only changed my life, it added to my life.
Yeah,
and I went to the class in January of 2014, and I was in the class. It was seven of us, and five of us were from different countries. And that was truly amazing to be able to get a chance to spend a week with a number of individuals that you met for the first time, but they were meeting each other for the first time and just sharing in that class. And from then, I continued to go back because I was drawn to being a participant in assisting Akoska in their efforts to bring DE program to the continent. And certainly working with George Imbado and learning from them was very beneficial to me, and consequently introducing them to people in the United States as well.
You had been over, I think, multiple times before when I was there last June for the first time, and we did the DE workshop together. To say life-changing would be an understatement. Like, it still is one of those things that I find myself going back to. And I remember people asking me months later about that experience. And I kept saying to people, I'm still trying to unpack how that affected me, right? You know, and I probably still am to this day, right? But it's such an amazing experience. I look forward to going through. We did the DE development work there, but I was planning on, and both Jill and I were planning on going to do the African DE this past year, but it'll have to wait a year, I guess. So, you know, you're removed from the day-to-day of the U.S. credit unions. As you've now went through that program and then become more involved, is there something that you think U.S. credit unions could learn from what they're doing on the continent?
Well, going to the SACOs and the credit unions in Africa, on the continent in Africa, in various countries, I was really surprised about the advantage they have over us in technology. They didn't have the checks. They didn't have the cards. They went straight to the phones.
Absolutely.
So they're able to reach out and serve their members very quickly, and they don't have to come into the branch. And it's throughout in most countries, it's throughout the country, and they can reach in the most remote areas. And that's something that we're behind on. And I think that's something we can certainly learn from that will help us to reach out to our membership here in the United States or customers as well.
I agree with you completely. That was something that I was surprised by, not only there, but the time that I spent in Asia as well. Just where, I mean, the phone skipped everything. It's pretty impressive, really. So,
yeah, we're considered leaders of the world, but when it comes to that type of technology, we're running a bad last.
Yeah, and it does seem like over the past few months, we've had to kind of move forward in that fairly quickly, right? As everything was shut down because of the pandemic. So
yeah, I think it's going to force us to do that.
Is there something that you think that credit unions need to do differently to just stay relevant going forward with all the disruption that's going on in financial services? I mean, I'm not even talking pandemic. There was a lot of disruption before this, right? But, you know, that you see that we need to do better?
Well, certainly when you look at what has happened throughout my career, of the economic downturns that we've had, and we had to make changes, new ways of doing business, new products and so forth. I still remember 17% mortgages, first mortgages at one time, and try to make a loan like that. But just in the recent time, since the beginning of this century, having the Great Recession and then turning around and having the pandemic has created many problems for many of our membership. There was a lot of wealth that was lost during that period of time with the Great Recession, and people have not recovered from that. Now you have the pandemic. The competition continues, but I think that with the pandemic, you have to really look at it because it created stress among your employees and their morale during this pandemic, because they're dealing with it not only when they're at work, but when they're at home and trying to put all of that together and work through that. So paying attention to that and to the employee staff and working with them to work them through that, we're going to have high unemployment. It's going to continue for a while. So there are some challenges, but there are also opportunities for you to be able to reach out to your membership in a different way. And we're talking about virtual, and to be able to get the technology available to make your environment much member friendly and serving their needs. And I would not forget that as a credit union, we often compete for the top line customers. Our members, when they become customers, when you're competing against the banks. But we have an opportunity because there are so many unbanked that are not getting the services that we could provide for them at a reasonable rate that we could charge, because they're going to the check cashing places as well as the pawn shops. And they're the fastest growing institutions over the last decade. So there are opportunity for us to look at doing business a little bit different and to dig a little bit deeper into the number of people that require banking services that can be made bankable. So I think there's a great opportunity in doing that. And there are going to be opportunities as the economy continues to improve, and there may be a new path for profitability that we can track down.
Absolutely. When you were just talking right now, it had me thinking about something, and I've read about it. I'm sure we've all read about it quite a bit over this pandemic. And you were a very early on, I'd almost say one of the pillars of the African American Credit Union Coalition, on the board and everything of that nature. We've seen all the reports that this pandemic has financially, as well as health, affected people of color more than others in certain communities more than others. Is there something, and this wasn't obviously a question that I had sent over your way, but is there something that, and does that tie into what you're talking about, where as credit unions in the community, is this something we should be focusing on, and how can we help?
Well, it definitely, because I think that when you focus on serving the financially stressed members, you will build that brand loyalty that will stay with you for life. The recession, most of the middle class income individuals, most of their wealth was in housing.
Sure. Yeah.
They weren't diversified. And so, that was the great American dream, and that was mostly wealth. And when that went away, and it affected African Americans as well as Hispanics in a greater degree, because they were not as diversified as, say, the white community.
Yeah.
And so they were not able to come back. When the stock market came back, you gained back the wealth while you're still waiting for the wealth to come back on the housing. If your wealth was just in the housing, then you're still behind. And this is not going to make it any different. This just points out the health inequities as well as the financial inequities that we have. But when you look at that, there are somewhat many times when you look at and begin to focus on trying to assist in your community, and this goes for the larger credit unions as well, to reach out to some of the smaller credit unions to assist them if they don't have branches there, or to be able to make sure that we continue our creed of people helping people through this. And that way you have the long-term effect of having that brand loyalty built. People will remember you when they were down and out and you were able to come along. And they will stay with you over time as they continue to grow and get the wealth. I always look at the banking. I came from 27 years in banking.
All right. Yep.
That credit unions plant the crop, but when it gets up to a certain level, they want to harvest it. The banks want to harvest it. And so, and that's a competition, but you still have to be relevant in providing services and products that people need.
Oh, I like that analogy there. I've not heard that one before. Some of the stuff that you were talking about there, Maria Martinez has talked about the loyalty when you help somebody out down at Border Federal Credit Union. And I know I've had conversations with, Renee or Jill or, just so many folks about that idea of what you were talking about, that, true generational wealth a lot of the times is built through the home, right? And home ownership, that's the start of it. So it's that thing that we pass down to, family members and things. So yeah, that's what you're saying there. Jeez. For the first part of this section, the last question I have is, once this thing is all over with, we've got a vaccine or whatever happens and we're all back to whatever our new normal is, what are you most excited about if you break out that crystal ball for, let's say, sometime out in 2021, hopefully?
Okay, so I have two answers for that. That you and I return back to Africa.
I am hoping for that. Yes, sir.
That's one. But the second one is in September, my wife and I celebrated our 50th anniversary.
Oh, geez, congratulations.
And so in January, we had plans to do a number of different things. And so hopefully in the 51st year of our marriage, that we get the chance to go away and celebrate.
Where's the plan? Where are you heading?
Initially, we're going to Jamaica last year. In January, we were talking about going to Jamaica, and then my wife started talking about the party as well. So I said, well, I guess we can do both, but it just didn't work out that way. So someplace, we like going to the islands and just sit back and relax. Why you go down there and just sit back and relax? But that's what we call having a good time.
Jill and I could not agree with you more, and congratulations to both you and your wife. That is an awesome and amazing milestone. So,
yes. Good,
well done, my friend. The second part of the show, the leadership and life hacks, I couldn't be more excited to get to this part with you. You and I had the opportunity. It's one of these funny things that I'm sure you've had these type of conversations, a million times in your life with people. But for me, it was just this memorable event that I have told friends and colleagues about. You and I got stuck in the Nairobi airport for about 3 hours and just sat there at a coffee shop and talked. And I remember getting on the plane. I just started the podcast not too much before that, and was just like, that's what I want the podcast to be, right? Like, I wish that I had hit record and had microphones in our faces, because it was just so memorable. And then over that trip, there were other, like, after the day, just sitting around having a glass of wine. So many of these conversations. And one of the things that impressed me when we were there was how so many of us that are coming up after you, I mean, we sat and just listened. So now I feel like I get to bring that to some people may have talked too much, but most of us just listened to you. And I feel like that now I can bring that to the listeners here. So I was excited about this leadership, section of the show. I want to take a step back. You mentioned banking. You spent 25 plus years in the banking industry. What brought you to MeQ and then becoming the CEO there?
Okay. Well, you know, I spent 27 years in banking, mostly in branch banking as well as mortgage banking. So I had a certain amount of expertise and been around for a long time. I had been a senior level at the first bank and even more of a senior level when I went to the second bank, Provident Bank, and the first one was Equitable. And I had been applying for positions outside of the second organization for that leadership, that role of president. And I was thinking much more about mortgage banking. But the position came open at MeQ. A friend of mine, she actually was the chief of staff of the mayor, was always coming to me and asking me, did I know people for these positions? And she told me about that one. No, I said, I'm interested in that one myself. And she said, I'd love for you to apply. And eventually I applied and got a chance for the interview. And it was a good interview. But, you know, when I got back home, I'm my own worst critic, and I was beating myself up terribly. You know, why didn't I answer this way or that way? And then the phone rang, and I picked it up, and the person on the other end of the phone said, hello, Mr. President.
Ah, awesome. Yeah, I love that phone call.
The only thing I thought about at that time, I can stop slapping myself
right. Yeah, we're often tougher on ourselves, I think. So I have a question just on something you said. You mentioned you were at the bank, you're in a senior position, you were looking for that, you know, that gig as president, right? Was it a lot of applying? Like, if somebody else were listening today and they're at that position where, like, the next move is that president and CEO job, it may not come internally where they are. Any hacks, any advice that you would give them? Is it kind of that put your head down and just go for it? Or
you know, and this is advice I give to a number of people, and especially just from the perspective of the credit union and some mentors, and some people that I have mentored there, is that get an opportunity, go to the association meetings, your local association meetings, get involved. Because if you're looking for that next step, it's always easier to have someone know who you are when you walk in the room. That eases the situation for you. And I know with MeQ, when I went into the room, there were several people that I had known or heard of when I went through the interview process. And one of them was a legend in itself, and he's a former chairman and the state. His name was on a building.
Yeah.
And so okay. He asked me the first question, and he said, so what makes you think that you should become president of MeQ?
Yeah.
And that was the toughest question, because I had to do something that I typically don't do. And that's start to put on my bragging helmet about who I am and what I've done. And I've been working toward this all my life. So you get an opportunity, you take it. Now, on other interviews, I didn't do as well for the chief for that particular position. But this one I did. And I got a chance to study a little bit more about the process before I went in. I was fortunate.
We are all glad you got that gig, my friend. So that's brought you to credit.
Get involved, get on boards and things of that nature. And people begin to know you and become comfortable with you, and they can speak on your behalf.
So, okay. So that's something that I, like, again, we've met, I would say, in passing many times over the years, but, you know, in the past year, we had more time to actually spend together. So, and I was blown away. When you say you're retired, that's a pretty loose version of that word. Can you just tell some of the folks out there, what are you doing today? Like, all the different organizations that you're, you know, we mentioned Akaska and the board there. What else is on Mr. Hash's plate right now?
Sometimes I have to sit down and look and see and remind myself. I'm on three commissions here locally, Baltimore City and Howard County, Baltimore City Fire Department. I'm on the Lottery Commission for the state of Maryland. There are a couple of national organizations. One deals with the senior citizens. Another one is Inclusive, where I'm on their funding committee. And then we have the ones that are local here that I'm on. Two of them deal with my university, Morgan State University Foundation, the Business School Advisory Board. And there are a couple of the smaller ones that, you know, that I didn't know how to say no when I was asked to serve on those positions. So they keep me busy. I'm Zooming, but that's the good thing about Zooming. I don't have to drive to the meeting. So I do save some time.
There. You do save some time. A question for you. Was that something where you always, you mentioned, you know, for that person who's looking to become the CEO to get involved more in, you know, the associations and the boards and things of that nature. Was that something that you always did throughout your career? Or is it something that stepped up more as maybe you had more time in retirement?
Well, you know, the truth is in banking, we were encouraged to get involved in the Chamber of Commerce and some of those organizations. Actually, what happened in my case, there was a change in leadership in the division I was running. I was the change. I sort of got kicked upstairs. They wanted me to do something else. They were bringing someone else in that they wanted to take the mortgage division into a mortgage banking operation. And they actually brought in my former boss at the previous credit union. And, you know, it was sort of devastating, but good things come out of that. I was asked to become the Community Reinvestment Act officer and also to get the organization involved in the community.
Okay.
And, you know, quite candidly, I told the president, you know, I didn't ask for this. Can we do that? I'll do this for a couple months. If it's not what I, you know, if I don't have the passion for it, can I still get a severance contract? And he said, we don't want to lose you, but if that's what's going to make you happy. After 2 weeks, I forgot all about that.
Did you?
I really did.
I mean, you were like, I like this community job. Side.
You know, just helping people. And, yeah. And the bank had the commitment of doing good because it was the right thing to do. And we just opened it up. So I got involved in a number of organizations or got them involved in the right. organizations. I had the opportunity to get the senior management on different boards and get them actively involved. And to that point, I got a chance to get a better knowledge about what was happening, working with a board and so forth. So I was on the same floor with the president and the vice president, chairman and president. So that's, you know, senior executive board, as opposed to being out in the trenches trying to run a business.
All right.
Where the dirt kept falling down on me. And I was the biggest target whenever we were meeting if we weren't making money because I was an income producer.
Yeah, right.
And so, it's easy to take shots at you when you're on the expense side of the customer.
Right.
So, yeah.
You just reminded me of a conversation that we had in Mombasa, actually, at the DE. It was in the evening, and it's a conversation that's come up multiple times on this podcast. But I thought that you had such a great perspective on this. And it's that idea of relationships with your board when you're like the CEO. And I remember... whether it was a, you know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and when she became a CEO, she was like, I didn't realize how much my previous CEO shielded me from the board. I remember, like, you know, Chuck Fagan talking about, you have to look at the board as a whole, because there, even if there's one squeaky wheel, you know, you just, that they're one entity. And we were having this conversation, and there was a group of us, I'll never forget it. And there was a few people who were like, oh yeah, I deal with boards. And I just, in my head, I kept thinking of my friend going, you don't know how much you're shielded from the board. Yeah. So if you're not the CEO, right? Right. So any advice for, again, not only maybe there's something that you learned over your career for current CEOs, but also for that, maybe it's that SVP who wants to be the CEO and they've always had a, you know, Bert Hash kind of shielding them from the full, you know, working with the board.
Well, you know, when I joined MeQ, the individual that told me about the job initially, and, you know, the vice chair actually applied for the position as well. So I just knew I didn't have a chance of getting the position. And so her advice to me was to get to know the board. And which I had planned to do. And certainly the chairman was the boss, and he managed the board. I said something about managing the board, and he said, that's my job. And so we understood the division on the line, and I had the employees. And I had a great relationship with my board. They gave me an opportunity. And one of the things that they did, and it doesn't work in everyone's case, but we had so much to do to make some changes at MeQ to carry out their vision. I asked that my senior staff be an opportunity to be a part of the team and having them come to the board meetings so they could see the good, bad, and the ugly.
Okay.
Yeah. And they wanted me to keep the staff, so it's an opportunity for them to see what staff I had and whether there was a challenge in them doing the job. So I gave them an opportunity to do that. They gave me an opportunity to do that, and it worked for us tremendously. doesn't necessarily work for everyone, but I very seldom went into executive sessions in a meeting without having my staff there.
Your senior staff with you. Yeah.
Yeah. I had my staff, but we went in executive sessions. I might meet with the executive committee, but whenever we performed as a team. Typically they were doing the presentations and everybody was getting, and they got comfortable with the staff, and not necessarily because they didn't know each other and there was a great divide. And so it reinforced the fact that, that we had a capable staff just given the opportunity. And I told them, that was one of the questions, is that what will you do with the existing staff? Will you give them a chance? And I had done that before when I went to Provident Bank.
Okay. Yeah. That's, it's always an interesting transition when you come in to lead an organization,
well,
right?
You should get to know, well, definitely all of them are your bosses, so you should get to know them all, but the chairman is the most important.
That's the most important. I've heard people say recently, Jill and I are both a part of a CEO call that we've been doing throughout this COVID experience every couple of weeks. And the amount of conversation about how the most important relationship in the credit union is between the board chair and the CEO. it's been eye-opening to me as somebody who kind of watches credit unions from a blimp level on the outside sometimes. So I was looking forward to asking this question of you. Is there, as a leader, was there something that your teams or the groups that you work with have heard you say so many times? They're like, Bert, we know, and they can finish your sentence.
Just recently, I ran into one of my former teammates. They reminded me of something I always said, and they could finish it for me. If we don't take care of the members, someone else will.
Yeah.
That was my motto about everything we did. Members first.
Members first. They'd heard you say it. Hey, that's a good one to remember. That's for sure. Another question I was excited to ask you was the one about making that tough decision. You mentioned earlier going through the financial crisis in 2008. There have been, you know, over the course of your career, there were a few, I'm sure. And as a leader, you know, the buck tends to stop with you. And you have to make that tough decision that sometimes is maybe unpopular in the short term. Was that something you always had the ability to do? Or was it something that you kind of had to build up in yourself over your career?
Well, you know, initially in starting out, I was a branch manager. I managed a couple of branches and just working with people and hoping that they will be successful. There were decisions that I had to make on staffing for people that were not able to handle the job and the position. And I tried to be as fair and humane as possible and giving them a chance. But then when it came down to it, I'd have to explain that to them. And it was never the easy part.
Yeah.
And also in banking, I had to lay off the department. It was about 20 people. And I talked to each and every one of them. That was not the easiest day in my life. But when given or forced with those decisions, I'd like to sit down and talk to people and try to explain. But at the end of the day, it's my call on making the decision, and hopefully they can respect that. They can disagree with it,
right?
You know, at the end of the day, it's my call.
And hopefully they do respect it. I agree. Is there a common myth about what it means to be a good leader that you would want to debunk?
So they talk about it all the time. One of the surprising things, we were at one of our first retreats, and we did a Myers-Briggs, and everyone was surprised that I was an introvert.
Yeah. You and me both. We're a couple introverts. That's
Yeah, and so I was an introvert, and they were surprised at that. But just in leadership in itself, one of the things, well, a leader's supposed to be in charge, but necessarily you don't have to be the leader of everything that happens.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I always said is that we could all claim success for all our successes. Everybody had a part to play, and they could talk about it. But the failures came to me. Buck stopped here, and nobody could take credit for a failure but me.
That is funny you say that. I always, yeah, that's something I've tried to live by as well. Let me take the bullets. So that's good stuff. You know, when you think back to earlier in your career, was there a mistake that you made, or, you know, as you came up through the ranks, right? And you mentored. You mentioned mentoring earlier. You mentored quite a few people. Was there that mistake that you saw young leaders make over and over, almost that one that we all had to make to kind of move forward?
Well, if we go back to the leadership, you think you're in charge, you find out who's really in charge. I had a sign made for my secretary. Do you want to speak to the president, or you want to talk to the person that's in charge?
That's in charge, right?
And I put it on her desk. She didn't like it, but you know, it's amazing. Throughout my career, at times I was a very patient leader. I like to think I was a very patient leader. But once I got to MeQ, and things changed a little bit because I was in charge of everything. The chairman, my previous chairman, told me that not only are you in charge of the people, but you're responsible for their families too. So that burden came down in a big way. And I was so anxious to try to move us along. And there were times I was being impatient. Well, you know, I had a couple conversations with staff. I mean, they told me it's not the issue, it's how you react to the issue that creates panic among us. So I had to keep reminding myself. So sometimes we get impatient with trying to, and you're trying to do good things. You're trying to move it along, not for you, but for your membership and to make sure everybody's safe and employed. And so you push it a little bit hard, and that puts a little stress and pressure. No, it puts a lot of stress and pressure on the staff. So just remembering that we all people,
yep,
and that you have to work through it. And sometimes their biggest fear is what you will do or how you react to anything.
You know, it's funny you say that. It's a conversation that's also come up on the podcast before, is whether, and it's one that I know I personally dealt with as well, is like when you become the CEO, or in my case, you know, owning a business, when I hired my first employee, like my mindset changed, because suddenly I was responsible for the mac and cheese on that person's, you know, the kid's plate. So it's, you know, you're responsible for all these livelihoods, and, you know, these families depend on the job, quite honestly. Yes. So I can see how wanting to push it would be an actual reaction there. Was there a piece of advice or a life lesson that you received when you were younger that you found yourself going back to throughout your career?
The one thing that my parents taught me, to treat everybody with respect, and everybody was important. You know, I learned early on, people don't really care what you know. They want to know that you care.
Huh?
And so you bring the humanity into it. I mean, we like to say everybody's people, and you asking them to do things to help us all be successful. So you have to prove to them that you have their interests at heart. And a friend of mine once said, and I never forgot this, is that culture eats strategy for lunch every day. And if you don't have a culture to carry out the greatest vision, then it won't happen. You can force people and you can do it. But if you want to really be successful, you have to create that culture of caring, and because you want them to care. And I used to tell them, you take care of the members and I will take care of you. But if you don't take care of the members, I will still take care of you. I learned it from my brother-in-law. That was a great line.
That's awesome. I love that. You mentioned it earlier, and it was something that, again, came up so often in the first season of the podcast, were how important mentors and that network of people, you know, were in like all of our careers, quite honestly. And I know you've mentored a lot, so you've kind of turned that the other way. How did you first, I guess I would ask, how did you personally benefit from like that network or mentors? And then why was it so important for you to give back to others, you know, to help bring the next group along?
Well, bear with me. I have a few mentors out. Everybody was my mentor. You learn from everyone.
Absolutely.
But the individual in the banking industry was my first interview. And he took a personal interest and gave me advice on my career, and encouraged me to do this or do that. And so he was instrumental in directing me in my career. His name was Calvin Thomas. I had a lady we call Veronica Hugh Davis. Her name was Betty. She lived to be 95, and she was my boss. But she took the step of creating an opportunity for me to report to her boss, because she felt that was the right thing to do. I never forgot that. And in her obituary, she listed the fact that she mentored me.
That's
a big deal.
That's awesome.
That was in banking, certainly in the credit union. Herman Williams, who is still the chairman of MeQ of Baltimore, he's 90 this year. And so he certainly mentored me. I always told him that he had the wisdom to hire me, but the patience to teach and educate me. So
he was on the hiring committee. He was the board chair at that point also?
He has been the board chair since 1991.
So your whole time there.
My entire time.
That's awesome.
Another individual is Michael Hale. He was the first chairman of the African American Credit Union Coalition. Introduced me to a lot of people, pulled me into the coalition. I have to give a shout out to Fred Johnson, who's the Q's.
Yeah.
One of my employees told me that I should go to a Q's conference, and I ended up going there. Liked what they did, and I made sure that our board went through Q's as well, as a part of the training, so that we were all on the same line. So those were the individuals in their organization, and certainly AACUC being a part of that was a help in introducing me to a number of people that I considered mentors to today.
Well, I know through those organizations, you became mentors to a lot of people too, even if you didn't know it. Even if they were unofficial mentorships. Like you said, we learn from everybody. I absolutely love that. Before we move on to the last part of the show, if nothing's on the calendar, you've got no board meetings or committees that you're on, what does Bert like to do for fun? What do you do to unwind outside of credit unions and serving on boards?
Occasionally, my wife and I do clear our calendar because she's busy doing something similar to what I'm doing, maybe not as much. But we have a place up in West Virginia, so we hop in the car and just drive up there. And we call it Serenity, although we love our home that we have here and it has many of the amenities that that has. It's like going to another world and we just cool out and just enjoy the surroundings and each other. So that's number one on this right now, especially with the pandemic.
Okay, so this is completely not a work question at all. It's just going down there. I know how busy you were. It sounds like your wife was also extremely busy. Was that something, 50 years in, you've got this 50th wedding anniversary. That's like, did you guys always take time to disconnect and just be, with each other?
We definitely took vacations and got a chance to get away and so forth. But she had retired 8 years before I retired. And
okay.
At my retirement party, and we had all these people there, and it was getting very emotional. And she was due. They had a tape of her talking about me, but somehow they couldn't play it. So they asked her to say something. And she said, no, I don't want to. And I was saying, that's okay. She doesn't have to say anything because my wife's getting crazy at times when she talks about things. But she decided to take the mic. Now, I'm very emotional.
Yeah.
And I had people talking all night long how great I was. And I had this long speech to thank everybody in the world. And I was, I was at the emotional stage. I'm thinking, God, I have to read this speech. And she got up and then she proceeded to tell everybody I need to find something to do. I was not to come home and make her my next project. And it roared. We had 650 people at my retirement. And the women were high-fiving each other and so forth.
She's like, you need to just keep busy.
I told her she diffused my emotion. And I was able to give the speech because I thought it was so funny.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that I travel to Africa. She doesn't want to travel across the country to the other pond or any of those places. We've done that on a couple occasions, but she doesn't want to do that. So getting involved in the credit union and being away from home as much as I do, she's happy that we have that space. But the last 6 months, we've had to share the same space, and it hasn't been bad at all.
Yeah, that's good to hear. The last part of the show, these are the rapid-fire questions. The questions are rapid. Your answers do not have to be. So what was Bert like in high school, and do you remember the first time you got in memorable trouble?
So in high school, that question just came up recently because I'm on another founder on board. Anyway, we were talking about that, and they wanted to know what did I do in high school, what teams, sports teams I was on, what clubs, and so forth. And I really wasn't on anything at all. I was not. I was considered a good guy, I guess, because we still get together now, 55 years later. We have a function every year. Now we're doing it virtually. But the one thing that happened is that they voted me as one of the three people most likely to succeed.
Ah.
To this day, I don't know what they saw because I didn't show any leadership. I wasn't on the basketball team. I wasn't in the student government or anything of that nature.
They saw something in you.
Well, it must have been something in it. But we still get together, and I certainly love being around them. So you said the first trouble instead of just being high school. But
first memorable trouble.
Well, 7th or 8th grade. And it determined I went into with a group of young, I don't even know what we did, got sent to the principal's office. The principal looked around the room, and it's a small school, and he looked around the room. He knew everybody, knew their parents, but he didn't know me. And he said, boy, where are you from? And I said, West Virginia. So he told me, he said, well, if you were a hillbilly there, you think you're going to be a hillbilly here? And, when somebody makes a statement like that, you know that you're going to hear that term, and it's going to become somebody's going to just drill you for the next 15 years about that. And I remembered that. So I did not go to the office again.
Went again. Yeah.
But it wasn't the most pleasant experience.
It doesn't sound like it. Yeah. Right. So most of us stumbled into credit unions. When you think back to high school, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Really, my ambition was to go away to college and major in math. And from that, I assumed that I would have a career in mathematics. After 6 months, I determined that I needed to get into the business curriculum. I was more arithmetic person instead of mathematician.
A mathematician.
So I switched to business, and that delayed me getting out for a year. So it took me 5 years to get out because I did that. But it was not a bad haul. Getting into banking, once again, an opportunity came along, and I took advantage of it. I didn't think I would be in that my entire career, but it gave me something, some knowledge in the financial world and stuff, background that I didn't have. And it has been good to me.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Do you have any daily routines that if you don't do, your day just feels off?
Well, now I sleep later than my wife, which was not like that before. I get up while I'm making my cup of coffee because she's been up. I go out and get the newspapers. We got a couple of newspapers that I read. And I come back in and read the newspaper and listen to the news. And that seems like every day I do that. And that's what I look forward to it since I'm staying home.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
that's my routine. Yeah, at least one cup of coffee every morning.
Get you going. So the random question, what is the best album of all time? That album you can listen to from front to back and not skip a song.
Well, so I was a runner. I ran a couple marathons way back when, and David Sanborn's album was one that I had, and I listened to that constantly. But in recent times, the only two musical albums that I have on my phone now is Prince.
Okay.
Purple Rain.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I one of the best ever.
I thought he was a great musician. I thought he was a great talent, great artist. And Kenny G.
Okay.
And I love, it's just the beat. I don't necessarily have to listen to them all the time, but whenever I'm, you know, I just hit my button in my ear and one of them start playing.
That's the one that's going.
Listening to it. Changes my mood.
That is good stuff there. You know, I'm a reader. Jill and I have stacks of books all over the house, and many have been recommended by people on the show. Is there a book that either you've gifted others or that book that you think everyone should read?
When you talk about the people gifting me books, I did want to have a shout out for Carla Hayden, who is a librarian here in Baltimore that became the 14th Librarian of Congress, and she gifted me 4 books. During my retirement. She wasn't able to make the retirement, but she sent me 4 books, and I'm still working through that. I get books all the time.
That's fantastic. She's a librarian in Congress, and she sent you books.
So I had to do that shout out. The other, when I look at books, and this is an unusual book, it became a movie. It was by James Clavell, and it's called King Rat. And it's a King Rat. Well, what's that about? It was about a prisoner of war, American prisoners of war. And in this book, the entire rank and privilege got turned upside down. The private became the boss. And you know, it just drew me to it because it just talked about the environment, the change of environment, and who can be successful if they don't necessarily have the privilege.
Absolutely.
But once that's over, he had to go back to being a private. So, you know, that's the crux of the matter. It gets turned back up. But I've always enjoyed that book, and I read it sometime. Periodically, just to remind me of that.
You know, I've never read that book. I'm going to look that up when we get off of, when we're done talking. We'll head to Amazon. As you've gotten older, what's become more important to you? And my favorite part of this question, what became less important?
You know, certainly I've been blessed. I've been blessing in my life. And just trying to give back for the blessing is so important to me. Therefore, the involvement on the boards and so forth, trying to assist the little knowledge that I do have. I've never been, and my wife as well, we've never been material people.
Yeah.
The smallest things can bring smiles to our face. And as I get older, it becomes even less important.
Yeah.
You know, about material things. I mean, you look at our cars and they're beat up and so forth and so on. My boss told me one time, you just see, why don't you get a car instead of that truck you drive? Didn't make any difference. Transportation. So material things were never overly important. I like to have, I got a house and real estate, but, you know, it's just a home. It's a home.
Yep.
So, but it's more important in trying to reach out and help and give back.
I love that. I see that. There's a question I didn't send you. When you hear the word success, who is the first person that comes to mind?
Well, I'll go back to Herman Williams, who is my boss.
Yep.
And the fact that he's still working, he's the chairman of the tax board for the city of Baltimore. He's also the chairman of MeQ.
Yeah.
Okay. And he worked for 5 or 6 different mayors of the city of Baltimore. And he's always been a go-getter, involved. And I think that's what makes him go. So when I think of him, just from his viewpoint of continuing to be active and be successful, there are a number of other people I think of, but he comes to mind, and because he's still functioning. When I told him that I was leaving and going to retire, I told him I was in the fourth quarter. He said, well, if you're in the fourth quarter, I'm in overtime.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's like, what are you talking about, young man?
So it was a great partnership, and he was a very successful individual. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, Bert, thank you again so much, my friend, for being on the show. My last question for you, do you have any final asks or final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, this is a tribute to you. The appreciation that I have for you, we used to have our conferences for the AACUC, and I would make a phone call and trying to get people to come, and I could always count on you coming and showing support. So I just want to say congratulations on your success that you've enjoyed over the years. And thank you for being an early contributor to our success as an organization and covering us and giving us a little ink.
You know, I've told this story multiple times, but it's still one of the we all have those moments, I think, that credit unions have brought us where we're like, just, you know, kind of a little bit dumbfounded. And one of the first times I went to the AACUC event was in Charleston, South Carolina. And I was sitting there having my morning coffee, like outside on a patio. And I'm in like workout clothes. I think I went for a walk on the beach. And I look over, and sitting right next to me in workout clothes is the Reverend Jesse Jackson. And he was speaking at the event. And I'm like, and then come to find out, it was either like he went on and then it was a break and then I was supposed to go on. I'm like, this is the most unbelievable. Like, I was so blown away by it. I remember the picture still comes up in Facebook because I was just like, I hope I'm not bothering you with your coffee, but could I get a picture? Because this is unbelievable to me. So, but that was it was one of the first AACUC events I went to. So I absolutely loved it. It's still a mind blowing story.
That certainly was a memorable one.
Absolutely. It surely was. So thank you again, my friend. I cannot wait for us to be able to get back together and get back over onto the continent and start doing some more amazing work over there. It's been such a pleasure to get to know you. I'm so glad we were able to share this time together. Everything we talked about, we'll link to in the show notes. If people want to get a hold of you, they have questions, they'd like to pick your brain, email, text message, LinkedIn, what's the best way to get a hold of Mr. Hash?
Email bhash47@gmail.com.
We will link to that. So I'm sure people are going to absolutely love this. So thank you again, my friend. I can't wait to see you soon. Please be well and stay healthy.
Okay. And you as well. And be sure and tell Jill I said hello.
Before we go, I just want to take a moment to thank all of you for listening. We could not get to have this much fun doing what we do if it wasn't for all of you. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. And thank you to Bert for taking the time out of his schedule to share his experiences with all of us. Boy, do I love having conversations with Bert. And a big thank you to our sponsors, Trellants. Our friends at Trellants have been a longtime partners and a supporter of ours at CUinsight.com. So please make sure to click on their link in the show notes and give them some love. See how they are transforming data into actionable insights for credit unions from coast to coast. Last thing, don't forget about the CU Insight Experience podcast book list. Need some stimulation for the old mind? We have you covered. Get your next book recommendations from the guests on our show. Bert actually added one to the list that I will be picking up here shortly. Thank you all again for listening. Have a great day and stay well, friends.